Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Soulful, the podcast that reveals everything you've ever wanted to know about sneakers, hosted by myself, Kish Cash, and Jason Coles. And today, what are we talking about, Jace?
We are talking about probably one of the best-selling, well, not even probably, it is the best-selling sneaker of all time, the Converse All-Star.
Wow.
Which, you know, it's one of those shoes which I think almost everyone has had a pair of, but very few people know the story behind. So we're going to be talking to a chap called Hal Peterson. He's one of the world's foremost experts on one of the world's most loved shoes.
Wow, this sounds great. Okay.
Did you know, Kish, little bit of trivia for you.
Oh, yeah.
Did you know that over 270,000 pairs of All-Stars are sold every single day?
What? How much?
270,000 pairs every single day. And at some point, 60% of all Americans have owned a pair.
60%? I mean, it's one of those shoes that you just see everywhere, as you said. I mean, you see kids wearing them, you see people skating in them, you just see people every day, you know, just going to the supermarket in them. But the thing is, it's the demographic. It's just everybody. It just, you know, it just goes beyond, you know, ethnicity, you know, countries, you know, genders, everything. It's just one of those things that's just, we take it for granted, don't we? It's a shoe that we take for granted, really, out of everything that we've
covering. We do, absolutely. And I think, you know, it's one of those shoes that a lot of people don't even realise was originally a basketball shoe. You know, we think of it as a fashion shoe, but it's got some serious sporting heritage, you know, for almost four, I think maybe even five decades.
Wow.
That shoe, the All-Star, dominated basketball, and something like 90% of pro basketballs wore that shoe.
It's never going to be replicated. If this shoe,
never,
as you say, dominated for 40 years, what shoe now or coming out in the future will ever dominate in such a, you know, in such a fashion? I can't see it.
No, I can't see that at all. I mean, it's just never going to happen again. You know, its sporting heritage is probably unparalleled. I think it's got something like it. The US basketball team, US Olympic basketball team, won an incredible 7 gold medals wearing All-Stars.
What?
That's the creds that this shoe has.
Oh my days.
Well, Hal's written a book called Chucks, which he actually wrote for Converse as well. So it's had the official stamp of approval. And fantastic book, tells you everything that you want to know. But, well, let's ask Hal more about it. Let's head over to California. Hal, welcome to Soulful. It's great to have you on the show. Before we dive into the history of the All-Star, tell us, what led you to become such a huge fan of the shoe?
Well, they were always very popular. I'm from the baby boomer generation, and they were the shoe to have back in the early 60s or late 60s.
Uh-huh.
And my very first pair was a pair of low-top black shoes, which were the popular ones in high school in those days. And so, you know, I always liked them. And my 20s, I sort of wandered away to different other brands, but then I just came back to them because I really liked the way they look, and I've been wearing them ever since.
So let's go right back to the beginning. Where does the All-Star story really begin? When does it start?
It starts in 1917, and this was, you know, very much at the end of World War One, and the Converse Company, which was led by this guy named Marquis Converse, decided that he wanted to expand from his business of rubber implements for your garden and things like that into basketball shoes because it was becoming popular at that time.
Right.
So they developed the first All-Star. And that was released in 1917. Chuck Taylor is the one that made the shoe what it is today. And he started by making all these improvements in it in terms of the outer sole. That's where you see the, you know, unique sort of diamond shape. It's the idea that as a basketball player, you're on that, you know, highly varnished basketball court, and you need to suddenly run and then stop, pivot, and shoot, different things like that. And that was part of the reason for that design. And this is the reason why eventually it got the Chuck Taylor signature on it, because he'd made these improvements with it, and also in the way they stitched it and different things. That and the fact that he did this incredible marketing job.
So how did he first start a relationship with Converse? What you mentioned that he was a salesman. So was he really into basketball? Did he have a relationship with Converse?
Oh, yeah. Well, he started out as a basketball player. He was on this team called the Akron Firestones, and that's when he first started wearing the Converse shoe. And, you know, he liked it so much, you know, just went and knocked on their door, I guess in their Chicago office at the time, and said, I'd like to work for you guys. And I'm, you know, he was a good salesman, and he did a good sales pitch, apparently. So
wow.
The rest
quite
is
clearly.
History.
Yeah. And how did he help to popularize the All-Star, because it was pretty much the, you know, the most popular shoe in America in a pretty short space of time, wasn't it?
Yes. Well, this guy was a master of sports marketing, and just about everything that's considered normal these days was something that he did or innovated in terms of the marketing. The first thing he did is he started doing these clinics all over the country. He had this big Cadillac car, and he'd load up the trunk with a bunch of pairs of Converse shoes, and he'd start somewhere in the country. I guess he first started in North Carolina doing this, and he would go around to the different high schools, colleges, and sometimes with just the coaches, and give these clinics. And, you know, it was really a smart thing to do. And of course, the basketball players liked having that. And of course, somewhere in the end of the clinic, there would be this pitch. Well, you know, to be a really great basketball player, you have to have the right shoe. You know, okay. And that's where you always had.
We've seen that happen a few times in recent history. It's mad how the All-Star has dominated basketball, dominated basketball, I should say, for over four decades. How did it manage to maintain that for so long? I mean, four decades, 40 years of being the premier shoe, the premier piece of equipment that everyone sort of gravitated towards.
Well, it was, again, because of Chuck Taylor's his timeless promotion. Mm-hmm. And work ethic. I mean, he was out all the time, and he would, you know, go out on the road for maybe 250, 300 days a year. And mm-hmm. whenever it was the basketball season, he would always go to at least one game, you know, the networking. And also, you know, he did a lot of things like pick all-star teams and all the things that we sort of take for granted that the media does. He was the one that started doing that.
The all-star game is another invention of Chuck.
He was the man, you know. People would want his opinion on things. And I mean, by the time he retired from that, and after doing this for 50 years, he was, you know, pretty much considered an authority. How many other shoe salesmen are in the NBA Hall of Fame? I think he's the only one.
Yeah, I don't think even Phil Knight's made it into the Hall of Fame, and he must be the biggest shoe salesman of all time. Who were the rivals? What other manufacturers were making basketball shoes around that time?
Well, I think most of them did. Goodyear, and, well, you know, the names PF Flyer, does that
right.
ring a bell? Or
yeah.
U.S.
Yeah.
Keds. You know, they've sort of all been eclipsed by Converse over the years, although during the time. You know, during those early years, they were considered the top shoe for professionals. So, and they were expensive. When I bought my first pair back in the 60s, I had to pay like a whole $9.95. But that was like double what you'd pay for a pair at a shoe store. In those days, you couldn't sell Converse All-Stars unless you were in a sporting goods store or a department store that had a specific sporting goods section in it. So you had to be a big store.
It was very much a sports shoe then. I mean, because obviously today, you know, we know it as a fashion shoe, but I think people forget that actually it was kind of born to be on court, wasn't it?
Yes. I mean, it was considered the number one shoe for basketball for all those years. I mean, that's why basically all the teams wore them, high school, college, and professional. You know, in fact, the modern version of what we see today came out just at the time that the NBA was formed. You know, they did that merger between two basketball leagues, and that became the NBA. This was in 1949, and that was the year that the black and white high top first came out.
So the thing is, so 1936 is the first time that the Converse All-Star deviated from the all-black
right.
the all-black iteration. Okay. So when was the next, when was the, when did all the other colors come into play then?
They didn't come into play really until the late 60s.
Okay.
Basically, everything was black or white, you know, in those days. And it really, through, other than the Special Olympic model, they were all black shoes all through World War II and the end of World War II. Although there is another thing that Chuck Taylor did. He managed to get this huge military contract for all those soldiers going through basic training, and that, you know, you got issued a pair of Chuck Taylors. Here's Whoa. Your rifle, here's your pair of Chucks.
Oh, wow. Okay.
That's insane.
So it was a weapon of war. You were talking about the 1960s, and obviously basketball started changing in terms of other manufacturers coming in. So you had people like Adidas. I don't think Nike were quite there at that time. But did Converse kind of change the shoe to kind of battle the competition at all?
Well, I think they got sort of blindsided by some of the competition. For like 40 years, they were it. And so everything that they did was super successful. So all of a sudden, here come all these upstart young companies, and they have all these gimmicks. You know, remember you had a pump or an air cell or different kinds of gimmicks for the basketball shoes. And, you know, they were very slow to catch on with that. Part of this also had to do with the fact that in 1969, just a few months after he got elected to the Basketball Hall of Fame, Chuck Taylor passed away.
Oh, really?
And so they no longer had him, you know, and I mean, that was a big change. Another thing that happened, of course, was the company ended up getting sold to different corporations through the 80s and 90s, and that really ruined the company in a lot of ways.
Going back to the 60s then, so were there any sort of celebrity sort of endorsements?
Basically, they had built-in celebrities, all the top basketball players. Wore them, you know, Wilt Chamberlain, Larry Bird, Bill Russell, just to name a few. And so that was built in, and I'm sure they got their shoes like today probably for free, or, you know, the teams bought them for them or whatever. Or, you know, they, I mean, having somebody wear your product is a big deal if you're a celebrity. You know, in terms of other people, I can think of like the Kennedys wore them, you know.
Oh, wow.
But they, this was, you know, when they were kids, basically, growing up in Massachusetts, which is, of course, where the Converse company was. And, you know, again, because they were high-priced shoes, you had a little, have to have a little bit of pocket money to buy these. Of course, the Kennedys had no shortage of money. Back in those days, it was, you know, sneakers were for kids, and they weren't other than for specific sports. So, you know, they wore their Chucks during the day, but they probably had to dress up in a suit and tie to go to dinner or something.
I mean, I remember watching as a kid, I remember watching, you know, shows like Happy Days, right, which depicted, you know, a certain period of Americana, and also the film The Wanderers, etc. And I remember seeing like the whole sort of varsity jacket, you know, sort of jeans.
Oh, yeah.
That don't go out. And the Chucks, that seemed to be a uniform.
That's right. And in fact, Elvis Presley wore those in his younger days, you know, before he became a big star, because that was the style. Pretty much when somebody wants to do a 50s or 60s movie, you know, young people, they show them wearing Chucks.
I mean, you have a great chapter in your book, which kind of goes through all the movies that the, you know, Chuck Taylor All-Stars have appeared in. And it feels like, especially during the 80s and the 90s, like every other character in a movie was wearing All-Stars.
Well, you know, it's great. And, you know, now we have almost 1,000 movies in our reporting.
Oh, wow. So you actually have a database of all the movies that the show has appeared
in. Well, yeah, that was actually one of the reasons why I started that site, was because you know, I run a media services company. I'm not really in the athletics at all, but, you know, one of the things I really wanted to do was record their impact in the media. That was one thing that I was talking about with different people I knew that were also Chuck fanatics like me. And, you know, they do have a presence in our culture. There's sort of a big maverick streak to it, I guess.
Right.
It's a way of, you know, and, you know, like back in those days, if somebody was wearing Chucks and they had their jeans and the tight and you know, t-shirt with a rolled up sleeves and stuff like that. They were like a rebel, you know, and there was sort of that rebel side. But that's sort of one of the funny things about the Chuck Taylor, is that because at the same time it was the premier shoe of basketball, and in another time, in other times, it represented all the people that were anti-establishment, and then all the rock stars got into wearing them. And basically, it's a shoe that reinvents itself for so many different cultures. And part of the reason for that is there's so many variations on this same basic design. I can't think of any other product that has literally thousands of different designs over its history. I mean, every year they come out with, you know, maybe 25, 30 seasonal colors, different colors of the same Chuck All-Star. And then they also have all the different prints that you can get. And then there are all these different gimmicks like double uppers. And, you know, now they have these things called the Reconstruct, where they take half of one shoe and glue it to the other half of another shoe, another model, I should say. They're all still Chuck Taylors, just, you know, just stuff like that. They're always coming up with these little great creative ideas.
The perennial style sort of continued for Converse, you know, being adopted by, you know, the kids and, you know, the basketball players and cultural icons, etc. Things started to take a bit of a turn for the worse for Converse, didn't they, around that period at the same time, which is quite ironic.
They got sold off to different companies, and this started in the 80s.
And oh, wow.
Went through the 90s. They had several different owners, and there were all kinds of bad things that happened. First of all, they had bad endorsement deals. They had an endorsement deal with Dennis Rodman.
he was a live one, wasn't he?
Yeah, well, that he didn't was. Help him. Yeah. And then Magic Johnson, but then Magic Johnson declared he had the HIV virus, which, you know, how conservative the sports media is. So that didn't help, and then he got into a fight with them. So that was bad. And then the other big endorser at the time they had signed was Latrell Sprewell. I don't know if you remember him.
Oh, yes. He played for the Knicks, right?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. And he was the one that punched the coach. And they also had some problems with employees that embezzled money, and they bought stupid things like Patent Leather Shoe Company or something. Don't ask me why, but there was just a number of things. I mean, we're talking about the last 6 years of the Clinton administration, when we had this most incredible economic boom going on in the country, and they managed to lose money during that. Because they lost, it was that, but they also lost sight of their main customers, Midstream America. Mm-hmm. They decided that the Converse All-Star was only for the counterculture kind of crowd, and
So they pigeonholed it for no reason, really.
And and I mean, there are still a lot of regular, just plain old people that like to wear them, and they just sort of neglected them. And you know, when they started having the financial problems, so eventually they went bankrupt in the year, it was 2001. I think that was the last year that any Chuck Taylors were made in the USA. And you know, at that time, people just went berserk, because I mean, I still have a lot of these articles posted on the site of all the people bemoaning the loss of their favorite shoe from their youth. And anyway, it was too storied of a brand to let that happen for long. So this company called the Footwear Acquisition Company bought Converse through the bankruptcy court at a really steal price. And they basically said, we're just going to turn this around, and, you know, people want Chuck Taylors, we're going to give them Chuck Taylors. And so the manufacturing got started all up, although everything had been moved to Asia.
Yeah, because, well, I noticed there's a difference in just the terms of the silhouette, you know, because you get the Converse 70s now. But, you know, in terms of, you know, what I was wearing when I was skating in the late 80s, early 90s in a pair of Converse, there was a difference in sort of the slightly difference in the shape.
Well, those, you know, the Chuck 70s is something that they came out with just about the time that this second edition of my book came out. In fact, the publisher said, hold the presses, make sure you have a couple pages about it. Anyway, that was basically going back to the design standards of the 70s, you know, people. And that's why they're a little bit different, and they have the older looking stitching, which is more angular, and they had the thicker, you know, it was basically a way to charge a lot more money. This is the influence of Nike on Converse here. So that's that's really where they're putting all their money right now, is into Chuck 70 models, because they're a little nicer, but they're a lot more expensive.
It was an eye-opener when I went to Japan last year, because they have Made in Japan ones out there, and they're different as well.
Yeah, well, the way that Converse works internationally is they have different companies all throughout the world. You have one in the UK. There's one in Netherlands. There's one in Scandinavia. There's one in Italy, France. Pretty much every country has one. Japan, obviously, and Australia has one. And they're sort of independent within the network. They can take the designs and they can choose what they want to put out every year. So,
have there been any other evolutions to the shoe along the way?
Well, a lot of little minor things and stuff. Of course, the ankle patch is one way you can tell. And if you go through the history of where Chuck Taylor's signature is, it's all over the place. Originally, it was right on the star, then it was above the star, then it was between the star, and that was just one of the things that changed. And then, of course, the color. They went to the red, white, and blue, which is sort of considered the standard now. But before then, the patches were basically white. Another change had to do with its stitching. You know, that's something you might have noticed. They don't have, because they didn't have the extra little circle of canvas, that they didn't need that particular stitching. It was just, again, a way to save money. They changed the shoelaces, which is surely has been, to me, a sort of a point of annoyance. But on the other hand, we sell a lot of shoelaces because of it.
I mean, you know, we're men of detail at the end of the day. I mean, you know, that's apparent. The All-Star has been a real canvas for seemingly thousands upon thousands of collaborations, you know. And when did this actually begin, right? You know, the whole collaboration process from your recollection. And also, do you have any particular favorites and why?
Well, that's a lot of questions there, but let's start with Chuck's art. That's what you're talking about. Basically, people have taken their marking pens and ballpoint pens for that matter and marked stuff on their pairs of Chuck's as long as I can remember, you know. At least, you know, not if you're on the basketball team. I'm sure the coach would have gotten on your case for doing something like that. But, you know, people are wearing them on their own personal way, you know, they would put stuff on it. And, you know, you see that even in movies. There's a Miley Cyrus movie where she writes on hers. And, you know, a lot of people did that. And then we've had actual artists that make these incredible paintings and drawings on it. In fact, there's a whole subculture of little companies that will take your pair of, usually they like to use the Optic White high tops and draw whatever you want on it, or, you know, there's, you know, some issues with it because I'm sure there are copyright violations involved. But I've actually had, you know, people try don't do Disney on your Chucks if you don't want to get in trouble.
Yeah.
Mickey gets mad.
Oh, well, Mickey has some mean lawyers, I think. Anyway, I had this lady and she did the most incredible. In fact, I have a couple of pictures of that in the book, artwork on these pairs of Chucks. Of all the drawing you can do, and people can make them into a real piece of artwork. Wow. And it's, you know, you wouldn't really want to wear them, you know, because it's like, you know, you're wearing a Leonardo da Vinci Chuck Taylor or something. Right. You know, and don't want to ruin the painting, you know, and that's, in a way, that's too bad. So they sort of become something you want to put up on your shelf rather than on your feet. There have been so many different additions and things like that. One of the things that I really liked, and I collected a bunch of these, are the rock musician line, the 2,800 years. So they had the Century Project, and they came out with all these different models, and they put out this whole line of tributes to different rock groups, you know, with like the Ramones and... In fact, there's like a nice little spread in the book about that as I took all these pictures of them because they're really cool looking and I have the collection. I figure they're going to be worth something someday. And then again, you really don't want to wear them, but there's pretty much all these bands represented. And so I guess if you're a big deal band, you know, you would have one of these. But, you know, they did everybody from AC/DC all the way through Pink Floyd and
I remember when you look at pictures of 70s New York and you see all the rockers and that, what they're wearing on their feet, they're wearing Converse, aren't they, you know? Then that DNA carried on its way through to the early noughties when you had the White Stripes and the you know, the Strokes. Was there a correlation between the adoption of the shoe then and the, you know, the advent of rock and roll?
But you remember in the early days of rock and roll when they did their performances, they always dressed up, you know, and even the Beatles always wore wore their suits and stuff like that. You know, and they did, the Beatles actually did wear Chucks at times, not in their performances. Again, had to do with the management. It was sort of the punk rock kind of thing, which was when you started seeing people wearing them all the time. And now it's sort of cross-trended across the whole business. Like I see everybody from, Christian musicians, that do middle America, regular America, and extreme America, and for that matter in the world, they all wear the same thing. And that's, to me, the biggest irony of the Chucks is they're the shoe for the insiders and the outsiders simultaneously. Wow. Just because there's so many versions of them.
Do you think that's why they, across the generations, people who love the shoe, they're incredibly loyal, seemingly, a lot more so than with any other sneaker or brand? I mean, why do you think that is?
Well, that's something that we study on the website, just because it's really amazing. We tried to sort of list some of all the ways that why people like them, and they, they have youth appeal. So I suppose if you're an older person wearing them, you say, well, that can relate to being back to my younger days. But they're also classics, and the classic and the retro styles are very popular. They're comfortable. People like to wear them because they break in real easily, and they represent different things for special activities for people, or they represent, used to be like freedom from the regular world of work. Of course, now people wear them to work, so everything seems to change. But they represent simplicity in our complicated time, because what's simpler than design than a pair of Chucks when you think about it? And I think also because they just have the greatest eye appeal. But that stitching combination, and it's just a practical thing, but it's beautiful in its simplicity. One of the reasons why they're so noticeable in films is because they stick out in the photography, because they, they don't blend in. You always notice them, and I think that's part of their appeal.
So what do you think lies ahead for the All-Star?
I think it's just going to continue to be sort of a staple of people's footwear, unless something radically new comes around and people's feet change or something. I don't it just always is amazing to me how they keep being readopted by every generation, and they think, oh, this is so cool for me. And, once in a while you see an article, well, are you too old to wear them? And I say, don't listen to these people. They don't know what they're talking about. But, people just like the look of them. It used to be they were cheap. Now they're sort of mid-priced. And Chucks used to be cheap, during that counterculture time. That was one of their appeals, because you could buy five pairs of Chucks for the price of one Air Jordan or something like that.
Hal, tell us a bit about your website. You run a great website called ChucksConnection.com. Tell the listeners a little bit about the website and what you do.
Well, this was something that came out of the early days of the internet. I've had this site up now for 22 years.
So wow.
Wow.
Since 1998. I was, my main career, I was a teacher, and I taught things like music and computers and digital media, all these kinds of things. So I'd learned how to become a webmaster, and I'd developed a business where I could design websites and work on them, and always liked the Chucks. And in the early days of the internet, people would write around and just talk about their different shoes that they liked, and I found there was a niche of people that liked their Chuck Taylors, so we corresponded a little bit and started talking about some of these things. And I thought this was a good business opportunity, just to see if you could make this into something. I never really was interested in it being hugely profitably successful, but in the early days it did all right in terms of the sales of shoes, because people like Converse, again, this is back to the pre-bankruptcy Converse, didn't think there was any potential for sale of shoes on the internet. Oh, totally wrong that person was. I remember actually talked to the marketing manager for Converse and their thing about this, and he just said, no, the only way you could have an online site to sell Converse shoes is if you had a brick and mortar store. And I didn't really want to open a shoe store just to have my website, so luckily, they have these things called affiliate sales. And I found a gentleman in North Carolina, who wasn't that far from where they used to be manufactured, who wanted to partner with me. And so in those early days, we made quite a good amount of sales just from the website. You know, and of course, anytime something's successful on the website, you know, immediately the big corporations want to come in. And
is it mad to think that now Converse is permeated, you know, the Converse All-Star has permeated into the fashion world, though, because you're getting so many collaborations. I mean, JW Anderson ones have been so well received of recent, and then you get the Comme des Garçons ones with the big heart on the side, and then you got the Josh Feeders ones that I've got literally right to my left there, which got the rip-off panels, etc. I mean, did you ever envisage that sort of thing going on as well?
Well, it's the sign of the popularity, and I think this is another reason why they're going to continue to succeed and be successful, is because, you know, they've always been into doing these collaborations, you know, or doing things for special occasions. And basically that's what these are. They're like seasonal issues, although if they're really successful, like a couple of that you mentioned, they've remanufactured those because they were so popular and sold out quickly. Mm. You know, I mean, that's really what drives this business, is the sales. And
Is there any particular ones from the recent era of collaborations that, like, grab you?
Well, it's funny, they've come out with some reissues from, you know, they had these things called pocket chucks, you know, where they had a little pocket on the side. They just came out with that again. You know, it's popular, but
people tend to keep all kinds of things in those, don't they?
Well, this time they made the pockets too small. I'd figure for this generation you'd want to be able to fit your little credit card in there. That does take rolled up cash and a key, I think, you know.
Okay.
But the moral of the story is probably it's not a good idea to put your financials in your shoes. But
Hal, you've written, we mentioned it before, you've written a fantastic book about the All-Star. Tell us a little bit about what inspired you to write that, and, you know, what was the experience like gathering all that research?
Well, I have to say it was probably the easiest book contract I ever got, because they contacted me. It's like what you did. You know, they saw the website, and the vice president of the company said, we want to do a book on Converse All-Stars. You know anybody that could write one? And so I said, yeah, I do. So I sent him a proposal, and the rest is, you know, history. It got published, and it's now had a second edition out.
That's brilliant. Congratulations.
Yeah, so if anybody's interested, you can get it pretty much anywhere on all the sites. And
I'm a bit of a shoe enthusiast, as one of my friends has coined the term, and have a few pairs in my archives, shall we say. How many pairs of All-Stars have you got?
my wife says too many, but well, I have hundreds. I literally have hundreds of pairs over the years, because I buy them. I don't have an endorsement deal with Converse because I want to be completely independent, you know. But we put all these photo shoots of them, you know. In fact, I just ordered a few more of the newer seasonal ones so we could put those up, and, you know, then I try to resell some of those. But if you like Converse shoes, you collect them, you know. And so, like I say, I have a good collection of not only the rock star ones, but certainly some of the vintage models from the early days, and all kinds of different funny ones, you know, where they had like double the number of eyelets or multiple eyelets.
The Vervatos ones.
All right.
Right?
Well, yeah, the multiple eyelet ones is like double details, it's called. And it has like, instead of 8 pairs, it has 16, and, you know, that kind of stuff, you know.
Yeah.
And then there's one where they just put eyelets all over the upper canvas.
Hal, we had some questions in from the listeners.
In from Magic Number 9. The All-Star has appeared in hundreds of movies, but which one do you like the most, Hal? Which movie appearance?
That's hard. You know, there's so many of them. Like I said, we have over 930 of them identified at the moment. I can't. Let me give you maybe a top 5 that you should see.
Okay.
Well,
yeah.
If you like skateboarding, you got to see this movie called Thrashin'. It's like the skateboarders' version of Romeo and Juliet, but a lot less tragic, you know. And I mean, there's like all these crazy skateboarding scenes between these gang and this guy that's a real star skateboarder, but he's an interloper from the outside of downtown. And anyway, there's at least 30 people that wear high top Chucks in this movie, and they have all these great skating races and scenes with them. So that's one. The classic sports movie for basketball with Chucks is Hoosiers. You know, that Gene Hackman plays goes into the small town in Hickory, Iowa, Indiana, and turns it all around. If they get to win the state championship, and you know, so there's a good one. I think if you like musicals of all things, the High School Musical, I think it was the third one. You know, you see, he wears Chuck Taylors in that movie. You know, the incredible dance scenes they do with him and this other guy. They're just, the choreography is great in those, and you don't often see that in a film. So, you know, there's that science fiction movie, I, Robot, if you remember that one with Will Smith.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Will Smith, great film.
Yeah, and he says, I've got this vintage pair from 2007, you know, that he puts on.
Okay, yeah.
That's a great opening scene. I mean, that was a great product placement of all. And, you know, there's a good John Grisham mystery called The Client. It starred this.
Yes. Oh yeah!
If you've seen that one, you know that's a pretty dramatic film. And then that Brad Renfro wears a perfect little rebel kind of kid. You know, comes from an indigent family, but he's there to protect his brother from the mafia and the.
Hal, it's been great talking to you. Sadly, we have to wrap it up there. But wow, I think that was fantastic. I mean, I know Kish and I certainly learned a hell of a lot more about this shoot.
Some fantastic anecdotes and some knowledge bombs, as we say, dropped for sure.
It's been fun talking to you guys, and I appreciate the call.
Well, we do appreciate that, Hal.
Okay, thank you so much.
Okay,
thank you. Wow. Well, Jace, that was amazing chatting to Hal. How many knowledge bombs, and my knowledge has been, you know, ever expanded as that. So that's it for another episode, people. Thanks for listening. And remember to send your questions to us on Twitter or Instagram at soulful_podcast. You can also follow myself, Kish Cash, at KishCash1, and Jace at Made by Jace.
And don't forget to subscribe to the podcast. And if you enjoyed it, please tell all of your friends and leave us a nice review. We really do appreciate it. See you next time.